You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Raping kids is wrong, and people who rape kids should go to jail. So should people who collect or share photos of kids being raped. I'm not afraid to say it. I'll say it again. Raping kids, people who do that, they should go to jail. You can believe that, as I do, and also believe that not all pedophiles have raped kids, and not all child rapists are pedophiles. And making a distinction when it comes to pedophiles between pedophiles who've raped kids and pedophiles who haven't, and figuring out what the ones who haven't might have done differently, besides, you know, not raping kids, figuring out what their coping mechanisms are or their strategies to avoid offending have been, that might help make the world a safer, better place. Not for pedophiles, for kids. Figure out what pedophiles who haven't raped kids are doing, besides not raping kids, and reach pedophiles who may not have offended yet, and share those coping mechanisms and strategies with them so that they never rape a child. And most pedophiles haven't raped kids. And one of the things that distinguishes pedophiles who haven't raped kids from pedophiles who have is their awareness that it's wrong, that it's morally indefensible, that their desires can never be acted on, which is why they have never acted on them. So when you tell a pedophile, most pedophiles, that pedophilia is wrong, that raping kids is wrong, you're not really telling most pedophiles something most pedophiles don't already know. Still, I am happy to signal boost that message, don't rape kids, raping kids is wrong, for all to hear. This came to mind while I was reading a recent piece by a writer I'd never heard of, Brendan O'Neill, in a publication I'd never heard of called Spiked. O'Neill is their chief political writer, and most of his writing is dedicated to railing against Netflix executives, the people who run tennis tournaments in Australia, and how wokeness ruined the new Sex and the City reboot. You know, politics stuff. So O'Neill wrote a piece a week or two ago headlined, "We Need More Kink Shaming." And it was illustrated with a photo of a guy in a puppy mask at a pride parade. But most of the piece is about pedophilia and an imaginary campaign to normalize pedophilia, to destigmatize pedophilia. A campaign that is really being waged nowhere by no one. After calling pedophiles sickos and perverts, O'Neill writes, "What a weird world we live in. On the one hand, we're constantly being told to destigmatize certain ways of life, whether it's minor attraction, pedophilia, zoophilia, that's perverts who have sex with animals, men who like dressing up as babies, the pup fetish, people who pretend to be dogs, and so on. Suggests that these are warped pastimes that decent human beings should not engage in, and you'll be accused of kink shaming. Shaming people for their sexual perversions is a big no-go in the woke era." Can you see what he did there? O'Neill lumps pedophiles and zoophiles in with people who are into pup play, and people, adult people, who are into pup play, and adult people who are into diapers with other adult people. There's a pretty simple and easy distinction you can make between these two groups on the one hand, pedophiles and zoophiles, and these other two groups on the other hand, pup play practitioners and adult baby diaper lovers. I would say, if I were feeling generous, that the distinction was apparently lost on O'Neill, but that's too kind. The distinction was intentionally obscured, maliciously blurred. What O'Neill leaves out, what he doesn't want his readers to think about, is consent. A child and an animal are incapable of consenting to sexual activity. With an adult in a child's case, with a human in the case of a horse or a chicken or a dog or a ferret or a dolphin, adults into puppy play with other adults or adults into ABDL, they aren't harming anyone. There are no consent violations there. These are not moral equivalents, which is how O'Neill attempts to paint them. He attempts to lump in pedophiles and zoophiles with pup players, mostly gay, and adult baby diaper lovers. Look, people who rape children or animals, or other adults for that matter, should be ashamed, should go to jail. But rape, sexual assault, is not a kink. It's a crime. And while O'Neill condemns efforts to destigmatize pedophilia, which is how he describes the attempt to make a distinction between pedophiles who've offended and pedophiles who haven't, while he condemns people who feel some sympathy for a person who is cursed with these desires, with attraction to children, desires they never chose and can never act on morally. By lumping these groups in together, O'Neill isn't just attempting to stigmatize kinksters and queers by association, although he is doing that. He's trivializing rape and sexual assault, including the rape of children. By lumping adults who enjoy romping around with other adults in puppy masks together with men, and it's mostly men, who rape kids, it is O'Neill, and not the people he rails against, who's guilty of trivializing child rape. Before pivoting away from O'Neill's point and his whole dishonest point, this whole dishonest piece, I want to say, whenever someone goes off and then goes on and on and on about how other people should be ashamed of their non-normative desires, which is an expression O'Neill uses, part of me always thinks, yeah, I want to see that guy's browser history. Bet it's interesting. That goes double, triple, quadruple for someone who can't or won't make a moral distinction between harmless non-normative desires like pup play or even diapers and harmful ones like raping kids. I'm going to make a hard pivot here. I'm going to leave O'Neill's odious piece behind. But I do want to think about the headline for a second, the statement the headline makes, absent the piece, divorced from the piece itself. We need more kink shaming. Do we need more kink shaming? Talking just about kinks here, kinks, not crimes. You know who else used to really get off on shaming people for their sexual orientations and their kinks, their desires? Jerry Falwell Sr., brilliantly portrayed by Vincent D'Onofrio in the eyes of Tammy Faye, currently streaming on Netflix. Jerry Falwell Jr., his son, took the family business over after his father died, took over Liberty University, a Christian college. And as we all found out a year or two ago, whether we wanted to find this out or not, Jerry Falwell Jr. liked to watch other men fuck his wife. At least one pool boy that we know of. Or probably more. More pool boys, more other kinds of boys. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Watching someone else fuck your spouse? I'm sorry, that shit's hot. My marriage, like Jerry Falwell Jr.'s marriage, is open. We've had threesomes, and since we don't have sex through a sheet with a hole cut in it, that means I have watched other people fuck my husband. I've watched my husband fuck other people. And it's hot. It's also on some level shameful. Wrong? Not because it's so, so wrong and so, so shameful. This is not how you're supposed to behave as a married person. It's not what you're supposed to do or want as a married person. And yet, we do it. Not all of us. Some of us, we do it. And we want it. And it seems to me that, as with most kinks, even for the sex positive and kink positive, that tension between what's right and what's hot, what's wrong and what's hot, that contradiction, even that little bit of residual shame, maybe we don't want to let go of that. I sometimes think about all the efforts in sex-positive communities, sex-positive writers, sex-positive podcasters, all of our efforts to normalize kink, and I'm all for it, but sometimes I think, do the kinky really want that? Because if we resolve all those tensions, if we erase those contradictions, aren't we robbing our kinks of some of their erotic power? I think a significant amount of their erotic power? A feeling of wrongness, something that you maybe should be, theoretically, objectively, ashamed of. It's a spice, like a hot pepper. Too much feeling of wrongness, too much hot pepper, dish too spicy. You can't enjoy it, you can't eat it. But just a little bit? Just a dash? Just enough to make your tongue feel like it's burning? Isn't that the good stuff? Don't we all like that? The pressure of being ourselves, our public-facing selves, it does get to us. It's a lot. And we need to blow that up every once in a while. By pulling on a puppy mask, or putting on a leash, or dressing up in drag, which is not to be confused with being trans. As we've seen on recent seasons of Drag Race, trans people can do drag and do drag. But pulling on that puppy mask, or again, putting on that leash, cross-dressing, watching somebody else fuck your spouse, wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. And hot, 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 in part because it feels wrong, wrong, wrong on some level. So I guess I'm conflicted. I think we need less kink shaming, not more. But we don't want to get rid of all that shame entirely. We want to hold on to just a little bit of it. Spice in a jar on a shelf. Just enough to keep things hot when we want them hot, but not enough to instill or perpetuate self-loathing, or the kind of shame-induced paralysis that can make us a danger to others and ourselves. Because if you don't give your kinks some space, your kinks will take space. If you refuse yourself any opportunity, any outlet, you'll lunge on impulse at an opportunity that presents itself to you suddenly. And that's likely to be with the wrong person at the wrong time, with someone you can't trust or aren't safe with, or when you're so fucked up that the person you're with isn't safe with you. I'm against that kind of shame, that warping, paralyzing, damaging kind of shame. So, no, I don't think we need more kink shaming, but we need enough, just a little, just a dash, to keep things hot, to keep them spicy for ourselves. All right, speaking of Jerry Falwell Jr. watching somebody else fuck his wife, or me watching somebody else fuck my husband, it's Cuck Week, and joining me for a very special Cuck Week show, the Venus Cuckoldress returns to the Savage Lovecast to take some of your questions. Some of Venus is on the micro. All of Venus is on the Magnum Savage Lovecast. Also on the Magnum, Dr. David Lay, who wrote the book on cuckolding, and Rose Caraway, who narrates the audio version of that book, Insatiable Wives. They join me for a joint interview about the phenomenon of cuckolding, what it means, why people do it, why they enjoy it, all that plus some of your non-cuckolding related questions coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Hi, Dan. 40-something-year-old gay guy here calling from Dallas. And I just got back from my local gym. It's a very unremarkable gym, completely ordinary in every regard. And working out there was a man in a sleeveless t-shirt, which read across the front in huge 6-inch unmistakable letters, "Eat, sleep, eat ass, repeat." This was 9 o'clock in the morning on a weekday. The gym was extremely busy, and this guy was every day of 40 years old, so he probably should have exercised better judgment. And upon reading the shirt, I was just struck with this immediate sense of just disgust, secondhand embarrassment, and anger. This was not a bar. This was not a circuit party. This was not Gay Days Orlando. This was your normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday gym with people from all walks of life. I would have had the same reaction if I saw a guy advertising his love of cunnilingus. So my question for you, Dan, is where does one draw the line between being out and proud and gay and flamboyant and unapologetic and maybe even a little bit transgressive and provocative and just being fucking gross?
You seem pretty convinced that this guy in the eat ass t-shirt at the mixed gym at 9 o'clock in the morning was gay, eating ass and fucking gross t-shirts, not just for gay men anymore. Plenty of straight people are eating ass these days. Plenty of straight guys wear fucking gross t-shirts to restaurants, to casinos in Las Vegas, onto airplanes, to the gym. So unless there were other tells, and maybe there were, maybe you knew this guy was a gay guy, you're a gay guy, I'm a gay guy, gaydar is a thing, and science has demonstrated, I believe, I'm not going to look the study up now, that gaydar is pretty effective, that gaydar works. Maybe you could tell this guy was gay. So he's a gay guy being gross at the gym, and as a fellow gay guy, you feel implicated in his grossness, right? Because straight people will lump us all in together and judge us all by the actions of sometimes people that we don't want to be lumped in together with and judged by others in the same way. Yeah, what do you do? There's nothing you can do. You draw these lines for yourself. What's out and unapologetic for you, maybe kissing your boyfriend or your husband goodbye in the morning, a simple and decent public display of affection, out and unapologetic and okay for you. There are definitely going to be people who've seen you kiss your husband or your boyfriend goodbye on the street and think that that's fucking gross. Do we want those people to draw the line? No, those people have to eat it. Not the ass, they have to eat it. They have to swallow it. They have to put up with us and fuck the fuck off and not come up to us and tap us on the shoulder and tell us they're gross. The price we pay for others not being able to impose on us to draw those lines for us and tell us what we can and can't do because they think it's fucking gross is sometimes we have to put up with somebody doing something that we think is fucking gross, that perhaps even a majority of people might think is fucking gross. And we just have to look away and not roll our eyes and not look at the t-shirt again, not give the person in the eat ass t-shirt at the gym what they wanted, which was a reaction. All that said, you know, if somebody tries to get on an airplane in a really gross t-shirt with profanity on it or images of sexual activity, and they make and sell those t-shirts these days, it's the airline that decides that draws the line for the airline and the other passengers. Same thing at the gym. If you think somebody is really inappropriately dressed at the gym or behaving inappropriately at the gym, creeping on other people, you don't confront that person yourself. You go and speak to the management at the gym. You go and speak to whoever's at the counter. And then they can decide whether they're going to, like an airline preventing somebody in an eat-ass t-shirt, prevent that person from boarding, whether the gym is going to prevent that person from lifting. If you're looking to spruce up your home and it's time for a new sofa, I recommend you get yourself an all-form sofa. It's the same company that made our Helix mattress. So we knew it was going to be good when we got an all-form sofa, and it was. With all-form, you can customize a sofa using premium materials and at a fraction of the cost of traditional stores. You pick your fabric and it's spill, stain, and scratch resistant. You pick the sofa color, the color of the legs, sofa size, and the shape to make sure it's perfect for you and your home. They also have armchairs and love seats. It's actually a love seat that we got, all the way up to an 8-seat sectional for everyone in your polycule, so there is somewhere for everyone to park it. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on. If you want your all-form sofa to grow and change with you and your polycule and your family when you move, all-form sofas are also delivered directly to your home with fast, free shipping. All-form takes just 3 to 7 days to arrive in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in just a few minutes. No tools needed. Or, like me, you can have Nancy swing by and do it. She said it was easy. We have an all-form love seat. It's actually here in our offices. It's a cool retro teal color, and it fits perfectly in our studio and looks great. And sometimes I take a little nap on that tiny little love seat. I curl up in the fetal position and it is so comfortable. You also get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love it, they will pick it up for free and give you a full refund. They even offer a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you, allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for my listeners at allform.com/savage.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy At-Risk Youth. I'm 37, living in the Bay Area, and I have a cuckolding question for you. I have had a very, shall we say, adventurous sexual history, dating history, that has involved past relationships with cuckolding and swinging and orgies and sex work and porn and lots of adventures. And my current partner is basically new to everything. Super excited to learn. I took him to his first orgy. He had a great time. We had a great time. It was awesome. He's really finding out that he is interested in cuckolding. He really wants to see me have sex with other partners. The issue is, I think all of my sexual adventures, all of my sexual experiences that involve other people are in the past for me. And I think this just the stage that I'm in, I think I might even be monogamous. And it's tricky because cuckolding to me, it seems like one of those things you can't like role play your way out of, or you can't like bring on a new partner. You can't fake, because the crux of it is that your partner wants to see their partner with other people. And that just, you know, you can't really like substitute that or suggest having a third or another partner. I'm just not sure how I can fulfill this for my partner, who, now that he's been introduced to all of these wonderful adventures, he seems like he's into cuckolding big time. He really wants to see me with other partners. And I just might be kind of done with that stage of my life. What would you suggest might be a solution so that I can fulfill this for my partner and he can, you know, really test this out and see if this is part of his new sexual identity?
It's unfortunate that you worked this out about yourself, that you figured out about yourself, that you were done with group sex, done with orgies, done with cuckolding, done with porn, done with these kinds of sexual adventures, after you took your new boyfriend to his first, not orgy singular, but orgies plural. Yeah, what are you going to do now that he's seen the promised land, now that he's marched into the promised land with you and is interested in group sex, a kind of open relationship with you, a one-sided open relationship, a cuckolding relationship? How do you walk that back? How do you fulfill his fantasies? How do you help him explore this interest when you no longer share it, when you're in a phase of life where you would like to be monogamous? And that may be a phase that you're not in forever, but it's certainly what you want right now. And I validate that. I support that. But what do you do? What do you do with the partner that you've awakened this interest in and really welcomed and invited this kind of interest by taking him out on his first varsity sexual explorations? Well, there is a way to fulfill his interest. There is a solution here. Cuckolding doesn't always involve having sex with someone else in front of a partner, or, you know, somebody watching somebody else have sex with their partner. Sometimes it involves just hearing about it. That can mean telling him about past sexual partners while you're having sex with him, comparing him, if he's into the degradation and humiliation aspect of cuckolding, to past sexual partners, and telling him where and how he comes up, quote unquote, short. It can also involve some playful, consensual deception where you invent stories. If you're out for a night with the girls, that night isn't going to end with you in bed with someone else or hooking up with somebody else in a bathroom or on a dance floor at a club, because you're feeling monogamous these days and you're coming home to him. But you could spin a tale, not deceive him. It would be clear that this is role play fantasies about what could have happened while you were out of his sight. But of course, asterisk, you know, didn't, and he knows, didn't, but you can both suspend your disbelief for some fantasy role play. So it is possible for you to scratch this itch, for you to fulfill this fantasy without you having to sleep with anybody else or do anybody else now, just mining your vast and varied sexual experience while having sex with your partner to tease and torment him, to sort of retroactively cuckold him with those past experiences, or spin out some fantasies about things you could have done now, and then see where you are in 6 months or a year. You may just have the sort of feeling about this guy where you want to lock it down. You want it to be exclusive for a while so you can form the kind of connection that would allow, perhaps later, if you enter a different phase or re-enter the kinds of phases you were in the past, where then you could explore cuckolding in real time. Then you could explore having sex with other people in front of him. But in the meantime, yeah, definitely there are ways for you to fulfill these desires of his that you helped awaken, I think, by taking him to those first orgies. Doesn't obligate you to keep going to orgies with him. Doesn't obligate you even to fulfill these fantasies for him. And of course, I don't mention the orgies in any way to create a sense of obligation on your part to get out there and have sex with other people, or even engage in role play about having sex with other people, if that's not something that's going to turn you on in this monogamous phase of your life. But if this is something that he has to explore, and you can't go there even in fantasy with him, well, maybe that's a sign that you guys aren't right for each other, at least not right now. And you could help him fulfill his fantasy by allowing him to find a partner who's interested in a cuckold relationship at a time when you're not.
If you are finally taking the plunge and getting serious about your creative or business venture, then you're going to need a website, and therefore you're going to need Squarespace. They make it easy to put together a fantastic website, blog, or online store. They have everything you need: domains, marketing tools, analytics, e-commerce. Squarespace empowers millions of creative types and entrepreneurs by providing them with the tools they need to bring their creative ideas to life. Squarespace can help you get your creative project or business venture off the ground. For instance, you can use Squarespace's suite of marketing tools and integrations to help drive traffic to your site or grow your brand. Create powerful email content that matches your website with your existing products, blog posts, and logo so your messaging is consistent and effective. And in case you were wondering, everything you make with Squarespace translates perfectly to mobile. Mwah! Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Joining me to take the next couple of cuckold questions, Venus, full-time producer and host of the Venus Cuckoldress podcast. She's also a founder of Venus Connections, a private matchmaking service for singles looking for loving cuckold relationships, and a returning guest expert to the Savage Lovecast. Hey, Venus, how are you?
Hi, Dan. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for coming back. I love your podcast. I have a lot of people on the show before they have podcasts, and then they get podcasts. Sometimes I'm like, more podcast competition. I don't need that. But I love your podcast, and I listen. My only complaint is that it doesn't come out more often.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate the feedback about it, and I'm so happy that you love it. I'm going to have to get on that. Maybe just weekly episodes from now on, huh?
Yeah, weekly episodes. And a lot of the voices you platform, I think, are important voices for men in particular who are interested in cuckolding to hear, because you talk with a lot of women who are in the lifestyle, who are cuckoldresses to their sub-cuckold husbands or boyfriends. And there's a lot of joy in that role. And sometimes guys are afraid to bring it up, afraid to ask, because they think, and maybe they have gotten a negative reaction in the past. And I think it's really good for guys who want to be cucks to hear from women who, you know, had a journey around it. You know, often with kink, you ask, and your partner, if they're not into it or haven't thought of it themselves, has a negative reaction, and then they come around. And I think that's what I mean by, like, a lot of the voices of the women on your show are really important for guys who want to be cucks to hear, because they may be women who initially had a negative reaction and who are now so enthusiastic about being in the cuckold lifestyle that they want to be on your show.
Yes, absolutely. I have had wonderful guests on the show, and just it's so important to have that female perspective and really highlight that, like you said, for the men who are interested in this kind of relationship.
Did you ever expect, when you first got interested in cuckolding or were introduced to it by a partner, was it your idea, that we would be celebrating such a thing as a cuck week sometime in the future, that this would be a campaign?
I had no fucking idea that I would be doing a podcast even, or talking to you, or doing a cuck week. So there you go.
You know, sometimes before we get to, I have a couple calls I want to take with you. Before we get to the calls, I have this question. There's this thing I keep turning over in my head. I'm all for normalizing things. I'm all for destigmatizing. I think people need to let go of sexual shame. That said, there is some part of shame that is deeply erotic, and you want to be in control of it. You want it to be like a spice that you add to the stew, right? You add a little red pepper to the stew, it has some kick. You dump all the red pepper in, it's inedible. I feel like shame's the same thing about certain kinds of kinks. A little bit of shame, it makes it that much more intensely erotic. Too much shame, you're going to act on it in weird ways, or you're not going to enjoy it, or you're going to be too so paralyzed by shame afterwards that you're mentally in anguish. But do we really, you know, we're having a cuck week. Cuck week's being celebrated on the internet. There's a cuck week hashtag. It's being promoted by a lot of other people who talk about sex and talk about cuckolding. But as somebody who's into cuckolding and aroused by it, do you worry if we completely normalize it or eradicate shame, we'll take some of the juice out of it?
Oh, that's a good question. I think probably it would. I mean, the taboo nature of this kind of relationship is what makes it so thrilling and so exciting, I think, for myself anyway, and for a lot of the guys who are interested in it. So if it's no longer so taboo, then who knows what it would look like. But I think that it is important for guys to realize that there is that cuck angsty kind of feeling, that shame, that nervousness, that excitement, that kind of embarrassment or whatever around being a cuckold. But at the end of the day, it is very, very important for cucks to know that despite that part of it, they are still loved and they are still important and they should be proud of who they are.
That angst that cucks feel, it's kind of like a horse, a wild horse. You want to put it in harness, you know, you want to not control that power, but you want to harness that power. And it can be a driver of an intensely erotic connection with a long-term partner, but you also don't want to get stomped to death. And I guess I'm torturing multiple metaphors now, stew, horses, but I guess I just want to advocate for holding on to some little bit of the shame, holding on to some little sense of, oh my God, this is so fucking wrong. And that's part of what makes it hot.
Absolutely. And the key is being able to process that in a healthy way and not allow the shame to be so overwhelming that it damages your relationships with people or it damages your self-esteem or whatever. So leaning into that shame and really processing it in a way where it is sexy, it is desirable, it is uncomfortable, and it's still fun is so important. And it's a skill that not everybody can do.
So I have a couple of questions from listeners that I'd like to tackle with you, if that's all right.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Dan and Venus. My name is Queen A, and I live on the West Coast. I'm a bisexual 26-year-old woman. My fiancé and I have been dating for over 7 years. Before him, I had never even had sex. When he graduated, he moved across the country, and we broke up because we didn't want distance. We stayed in touch, though, and 2 months later, I jokingly said to him that it would be funny if we did a sort of open relationship where I could do whatever I wanted, whoever I wanted, and he stayed monogamous. To my surprise, he agreed. Little did I know, I had just pitched the idea of cuckolding to a cuck. This worked really well for me because I had the emotional support from him, and I got my physical needs met from hookups. Obviously, it worked really well for him. Fast forward, I graduate, we move in together, and we had to talk about how we were going to continue the open relationship moving forward because I was not going back to monogamy. It was too late. This is when he introduces me to cuckolding. I had never heard about it before, but based on our arrangement in college, looking back, it all makes sense. Since learning about cuckolding, it's been about 4 years. Throughout the years, our experiences have been kind of sporadic, but everything we've done so far has been so fun, and I'm so horny for days after. This is honestly when my fiancé and I have the best sex with each other. I want to get more into it and do things more often, but I'm kind of experiencing this little bit of hesitancy about fully immersing in the lifestyle. I'm not really sure why. And Venus, I know that your ultimate fantasy is to get gangbanged on your wedding night. We were inspired by this, and my fiancé and I want to have me be with a bull on our wedding night. We're getting married next year, and I need to get over this hesitancy because I want to find a bull I trust for this special moment. How do you recommend getting over this?
This sounds almost too good to be true. As Yahtzees go, I want to sleep with other people, but I don't want you to, and she proposes that to a guy who turns out to be a cuckold. What are the odds?
I know, right? The odds are actually pretty good because there's a lot of guys who do want this.
Okay, so the odds aren't zero or even 0.01%, but still a real Yahtzee moment for her. I've seen this happen with other people who are like embarrassed about their kinks or worried about sharing them and then wound up having a kind of tearful, long, dark night of the soul disclosure, laid their kink cards on the table, worried about being rejected, only to discover that the person that they were laying their kink cards on the table in front of shared their exact kinks. That sometimes happens.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that she was able to ask for what she wants, even though she was doing it in a playful kind of joking manner. She did. She asked for what she wanted.
And she was clear. She was like, I would like to sleep with other people. I can see being in a relationship while I sleep with other people, but I don't think emotionally I could handle or want my partner to sleep with other people. I want you to be monogamous. I want me to be free. And what's crazy about this question, and almost makes me, you know, every once in a while you have to go, is this for real? Is this person being for real? And I think they are. I think they're sincere. What's crazy about this question is when it comes to cuckolding, it's usually the man who asks, not the woman who proposes an arrangement. I do want to say, though, that the caller says they're just getting involved in the lifestyle. Sounds to me like they've been doing it for years.
Yeah.
So I think she's further along in this journey than she gives herself credit for. Just because now you have the term in terms, now you can call yourself, you know, a cuckoldress and him a cuck and your other male sex partners bulls. I think the caller, I would say to you, you have some expertise where this is concerned. My worry, though, about planning a gangbang on a wedding night or inviting a bull to be the first person you have sex with on your wedding night, it's just one more high-stakes thing on your wedding, a high-pressure day already, that could go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I think I would tell her, just don't overplan it. And just kind of let things happen as they happen. If you script it too much, I can just imagine it being, you know, not fun and you're exhausted because it's been a long day and it just, yeah, it seems like a more of a chore. Mm-hmm. I would hate for that to happen. So I would just say, you know what, just have this loose plan and then see where it goes and have fun with it.
And wedding night sex is overrated. I think people should fuck first. I think you fuck before the service. Imagine standing at the altar with the man you're marrying with some other dude's cum running down your legs. Under your skirts so the family doesn't see. I think that sounds like more fun. People are exhausted at the end of their wedding days. You should hashtag fuck first. That advice applies in all situations, including cuckold couple situations. The only other bit of advice I might give to the caller is if you're asking, how do I find a bull for my wedding night? That makes me think that you are not seeing guys more than once or regularly. And maybe that sometimes, you know, the limit for the other partner is that there are no regulars. There's nobody you have a relationship with but me. And finding a bull for your wedding night is going to be easier if you have a regular bull, someone you trust, because you really are putting them in a position on your wedding night to play an important role sexually, emotionally, in your relationship. It's almost like a different kind of best man or maid of honor. And you don't pick a rando for best man or maid of honor. You pick somebody you know and trust and love who supports your relationship. And I think a bull on the wedding night has to be someone that you know and trust and like, if not love, and you can trust, you know, to be that person for you, to stand up for you or lay down for you at your wedding.
Yeah, absolutely. Good advice.
Venus is the full-time producer and host of the Venus Cuckoldress podcast, founder of Venus Connections, a private matchmaking service for singles looking for loving cuckold relationships. Venus, it's always such a pleasure to chat with you. I'm so psyched that Cuck Week got declared so I could have an excuse to have you back on the Lovecast. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Dan.
Venus stuck around to tackle another question about cuckolding with me. That is on the Magnum version of the Savage Lovecast, along with another cuckolding-related interview. If you are fascinated by this topic or you just want to get more Savage Lovecast, get a subscription to the Magnum version of the show for just $5. It gives you access to every Magnum we've ever recorded for a whole month. And you can also send the Magnum as a gift to a pervy friend. This helps us so much at the Lovecast. The Magnum Lovecast, more questions, more answers, more guests, no ads, and this week, a whole lot more about cuckolding. Subscribe now at savage.love.
Hi, Dan. Cis female calling from the Midwest regarding a consent question. Our local BDSM monthly social meets at a very LGBTQ and kink-friendly bar. On the night of our social, they're closed to the public, but a few regulars may straggle in. We usually have 50 to 70 people in attendance. Someone recently suggested that we have a night where everyone who wants to can wear their Bluetooth-controlled devices, such as vibrating panties, butt plugs, etc. We haven't worked out all of the details, but the thought was that we would share the logins to the devices, maybe have it be anonymous who's controlling the device or being controlled, and then you have to guess who's on the other end of the device, either controlling it or being controlled. In discussing this, some people think this type of play would violate the consent of those not participating. One reason given was that it would subject people, in particular ace people, to unwanted sexual energy. My thought was that the people playing should be discreet. Isn't that part of the fun of playing with those devices? I know for a fact individuals already play with those devices at our socials, just not in an organized, large-scale way. Is this violating anyone's consent?
I'm sorry, but if you're going to a kink social in a bar with 50, 60, 70 other people, aren't you signing up to be around, to be exposed to a certain degree of sexual energy? Let's not put this on asexuals. There are a lot of asexuals out there who engage in sexual activity for reasons other than feeling horny, and it almost sounds like a hypothetical asexual is being invoked here, that an asexual who's interested in kink, some people interested in kink play but not interested in sex or aren't aroused sexually about it, but that an asexual person, a hypothetical asexual person, might wander into this kink event or attend it for reasons and object to being exposed to sexual energy. Who is that person? Asexual or not asexual? You don't have a reasonable expectation at a big kink event that you won't be surrounded by sexual energy. I'm sorry, that just makes no fucking sense to me. You go to a big packed dance club on a Friday or Saturday night, you're going to be exposed to a lot of sexual energy. You go to a kink event, a kink social where people are mingling in the hopes of playing and perhaps engaged in some light play. You say the bar closes down for this kink social at that event. Well, okay. Don't want to be around sexual energy? Get the fuck out. GTFO. If you come, if you arrive, if you show up and you stick around, all right, you are self-selecting to be a part of a group in which there's a certain degree of sexual energy zipping around the room. This isn't a group of kinksters with remote-controlled sex toys or non-kinksters. A lot of people who aren't necessarily kinky still enjoy these kinds of sex toys. Crowding onto a city bus and hijacking it for kink purposes, and then, you know, a couple of kink muggles, a couple of vanilla people on the bus are going to be like, wait, what's all that buzzing sound? Oh, look at the looks on all these people's faces. Oh my God, what's happening? That would be unfair. That would be inconsiderate. That would be bringing sexual energy, you know, to the Clark Street bus in Chicago that you didn't have a right to bring, and it would be inconsiderate to bring. But a kink event, a kink mixer, a kink social at a bar that shuts down so all those kinky people can pile in and have a drink and flirt and make plans and maybe get just a little kinky in that space? Yeah, you don't get to walk into that space and say, everybody stop. And I think it's telling that no one has walked into that space and said, everybody stop. This sounds like one of those instances where a few too many people with too much time on their hands are sitting around inventing hypothetical people who might have a hypothetical problem with something that everybody else might be doing. Yeah, those people aren't going to be at that event. And if anybody like that shows up at that event, they can leave. And they should be, if they run around slapping the remote control devices out of other people's hands, they should be asked to leave. All right, before we get to listener response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Sandy Joe tweets, just listening to the first caller on this week's episode of the Savage Lovecast. That was the call from the woman whose boyfriend and the woman who basically invited herself over for a threesome, ignored and then violated all of the caller's boundaries. Sandy Joe tweets, fuck that guy and the third. Having been a third, stick to things that are agreed on, and if things start feeling unsafe, you gotta be responsive, respectful, and caring. Those guys, the caller's ex-boyfriend, I hope, and their third, those guys, Sandy Joe says, those guys suck. I could not agree more. Jam Eater Blues tweets, as someone in an LTR, I really want to hear at Fake Dan Savage's take on the West Elm Caleb TikTok situation and casual dating expectations among the straights in the next episode of the Savage Lovecast. And Snuggle Muffin tweets, it might cause a bit of mental anguish to research West Elm Caleb, but it is such straight people dating nonsense. I'd love to hear about it on the Savage Lovecast. All right, anyone who missed the West Elm Caleb nonsense over the last week, you can look it up. There are articles at BuzzFeed. There are articles at Vox. Basically, a hot, tall guy in New York leveraged his hot, tall guyness in New York to get into the pants of a whole bunch of women in New York. And he ghosted on a bunch of them. And one woman found out that the night after he slept with her, he slept with somebody else. Ghosting, love bombing, not nice, but, you know, kind of comes with the casual sex territory. So does your casual sex partner going on to have casual sex with another casual sex partner, which you probably have done yourself. I don't think West Elm Caleb deserved to be the character of the day on Twitter and TikTok. He certainly didn't deserve to be outed or dragged. That said, just as all of us who are out there dating, having casual sex, have to know that people who want to get into our pants may tell us what we want to hear, and that people who want to get into our pants and then do may ghost on us and then may go on to sleep with other people. I think in this connected age, the age of social media, we also have to be aware that if we treat a bunch of people badly, they may all hook up, find each other on TikTok or Twitter or wherever else, and blow up our lives. So yeah, maybe don't ghost, don't love bomb, be a little bit more polite as you're out there having all the casual sex with all the casual sex partners that you care to have. All right, if you want me to read your tweet on next week's episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to include the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And a big thank you to everyone who posted to your social media this week about the Lovecast, to Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We really appreciate it, the way all of you help get the word out about the Lovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hey Dan, this is a response call to episode 795 for the caller who said that she got herpes from her most recent sexual partner. I just wanted to point out that you don't actually know who gave you herpes unless you've only had one sex partner, because so many people have herpes and a lot of people end up carrying it for years before they ever have a breakout, if they ever have a breakout. So unless you've only had one partner, it could have been any of your previous partners that gave it to you. Additionally, for the orgies, highly recommend asking the men to switch condoms between partners. It's not unreasonable at all to ask for that. And if you don't, you're sure you're protecting yourself from the man whose penis is inside you, but you have zero protection from any of the other women that he's been fucking. So if you're using the same condom with a whole bunch of different partners in one night, you're going to get whatever they have to.
Hi, Dan. My call is a response to the girl who called in on episode 795 about the sex partner who had the boundary about he didn't want his hair being touched, and she thought that was weird, whatever, and she disregarded that, and then he was so uncomfortable that he left. I don't know for sure if anyone in my life has this boundary when it comes to sex, but I do know that someone in my family has a hair related trauma from growing up, because my grandma was very intent on making sure all the boys in my family, all his cousins or whatever, had that very 1940s little boy hair part, you know, that's three-quarters of the way to the side of the head. And one of my cousins has really curly hair, and so his hair wouldn't participate in this as well. And so she would hairspray it and pull it, and she was not gentle, and she'd make him cry. Whereas my little brother has really straight, fine hair, so his hair would just part easily, and it wasn't a big deal. But for my cousin who had the curly hair, it was really traumatic, because every time he was at my grandma's house, he knew that she was going to rip on his hair, and it was going to be horrible and painful. And it only stopped when he got big enough to be no, you're not brushing my hair anymore. So maybe this guy has something like that, where as a kid, it probably felt like a violation of his consent, not sexually, but just bodily autonomy-wise, of my cousin didn't want his hair being ripped. I don't know about this guy, but maybe it's something similar. So it doesn't necessarily have to be some weird sexual hangup. It could literally just be that as a child, he felt disregarded or pushed aside or kind of bullied by an adult in his relationship.
Hi, Don. This is in response to episode 795 and the woman's date who didn't want his hair touched. I've been with guys who didn't want me to touch their hair, and it's because their hair was from Hair Club or Bosley. It was a toupee or weave, and they were afraid I was going to rip it off their head. I think that's the most obvious answer. Sometimes fake hair looks very real, and you can't tell it's fake. And I guess that's the whole idea.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for next week's show or a comment about something I said on this week's show? The best way to get us your questions and your comments is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone to record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also call us at 206-302-2064. We prefer voice memos. They have better sound quality. But we love your calls. We love your comments. We love your questions. However you choose to get them to us. The Hump 2022 tour dates are all out now. We will be traveling to more than 30 cities throughout the year, bringing with us a brand new spanking batch of hot, short, often very funny porn flicks. So get out of your bedroom, get out of the house, watch some porn with us in a theater like a normal adult would in the 70s. Visit humpbuiltfest.com to see all of our stops, all the cities we're coming to, and to get your tickets today. And Sack Lunch, my monthly Zoom hangout exclusively for Magnum subscribers, is scheduled for next Thursday, February 3rd at noon Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern. So mark your calendars if you don't yet have one and grab that Magnum sub today. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Venus Cuckoldress on Twitter at CuckoldressV. Follow Dr. David Lay on Twitter at Dr. David Lay. That's L-E-Y. And follow Rose Caraway on Twitter at Rose Caraway. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian. And me and the tech-savvy, often-cucked, at-risk youth will be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.